Welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 50. Woo!
Omedetou! 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 Omedetou!
We are a group of four Bubblegum Crisis Boomer otaku who talk about all things anime, manga, and otherwise related to all that is otakudom. The Kenzoku are...
Hey, I'm Sam.
I'm Dylan.
Hey y'all, I'm Mike.
And I am tonight's host, Nick. The topic tonight is... Oh, before I get to that, I should say we are recording tonight's ep on April 25th, 2024. Ashing! So yeah, the topic is going to be my trip to Japan, because I just got back about 36 hours ago, so it is still very fresh in my mind. And the associated jet lag as well. So before we start, I thought we could play a fun little super fun mega quiz time this. And I have a couple of... having spent a relatively equal amount of time across four major cities in Japan, I got to observe specifically costs of things are actually pretty significantly different based on the city you're in, which I guess when you think about it fundamentally, of course that makes sense, but like I didn't think it would be this significant across certain topics. So I guess I'll just start with the easiest one, or air quotes easiest one. So with regards to accommodations, and for us, we stayed in hotels. We decided that we didn't want to deal with Airbnb stuff. We just wanted to be able to have, you know, a room that we can check in and get ready to go. In general, hotel rates in Japan are still pretty good because they're, you know, still, they're seeing this huge boom. And we're at the beginning of this huge boom of travel, so the prices still haven't gotten completely jacked up. So that being said, quiz time. So out of these following four cities, which are A, Tokyo, B, Nagoya, C, Osaka, and D, Hiroshima, which of these four cities had, on average, the highest hotel rates?
Huh. I mean, the obvious answer is Tokyo, but if you're giving us a quiz, I gotta game it a little bit, and I think that can't be the right answer.
I was kind of thinking the same. So I'm going to go with Hiroshima. And I'll just give my reasoning being that it's a well-known tourist place, and it's actually, I don't really know the size, but it's quite a bit smaller than Tokyo. So there's probably less room to negotiate hotel stuff. That's my logic.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Yeah.
Okay, so we got two for Hiroshima. What about you, Mike?
I would wonder about Nagoya. I would figure Nagoya would either be the cheapest or the most expensive, just because I would think its hotels would be more business-focused than the others.
So is Nagoya your answer?
Yeah, why not?
All right. Well, the answer is Hiroshima, and what I can say is it's very likely the exact reasons Dylan stated. Tokyo, of course, can have the most expensive hotels. You could stay in the Crown Prince Hotel right next to the Imperial Palace and pay $780 a night. But, you know, I feel like a rational person wouldn't do that. But when you talk about Tokyo, literally every other corner, there is some kind of hotel across the entirety of the city. So you can really have this huge spectrum of what you're looking for. I will say for the quality of the room versus the price we paid, best bang for our buck was easily Osaka. We got like this ridiculously nice room. We were, what was it called? It was like the Hotel Monterey Grassmere or something, something. It was on top of one of the major stations. And
Which station?
Shoot, I have to look it back up. I don't remember exactly.
Umeda?
It was
Giant Crab Station.
Yeah, Namba, the one which sits right in between Denden Town and Dotonbori. So a really, really good location too. And it was a bougie hotel. Comfy bed, like, you know, not something we normally would stay in. But because, you know, Osaka's second largest city and still big on tourism, like, I got that. I think that was the second cheapest hotel room we had. First Tokyo hotel room was literally one corner, like, walk away from Sensoji, like, right in the middle of Asakusa, so prime location for tourism. And that one was, I think, right in the middle, but it was also really small and really uncomfortable, but, you know, it was what it was. But yeah, Hiroshima Hotel was the most expensive by something like $30 or $40 a night.
Wow.
And it was a good hotel, but not great. And I think it's largely just because it's Hiroshima's like probably got 1/20th the population of Tokyo, so the demand for that for hotels is lower. And usually it's tourism related, and usually tourists have more money. So that's my suspicion. But yeah, good job sleuthing that one out. Here's a tougher one. With regards to food costs, and we're talking about eating out because we didn't do an Airbnb, so we didn't cook. So we ate out for every single meal. And this includes going to konbinis or going to restaurants of any quality. Which of those four cities do you think actually, with our experience, obviously it's anecdotal, but in our experience, which one had the highest food costs?
I'm going to go with Osaka, just because, one, which you gave us a little preview of on, on Discord, and two, I mean, I know it's a big food city, right? Like, it's pretty known for its food, although I know that Tokyo, I mean, if we're going, like, Google interview question style, I think on average, Tokyo might, well, now there's so much in Tokyo, too, so, yeah, I'm going to stick with, yeah, Osaka.
I'm going to go with Tokyo. I'm going to go with it's like Japanese LA, where it used to be a trash food city, but now it's all coming up and bougie and prices are coming up with everything too.
Okay, so one for Tokyo, one for Osaka. What about you, Mike?
I will arbitrarily pick Nagoya for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, so the correct answer is Nagoya, and it wasn't even close, actually. Wow. Our most expensive meal, without even trying to go bougie, was in Nagoya, and it was almost by an order of like 40%.
Wow.
Actually. Tokyo, obviously, if you want to go ridiculously high end, like Kaiseki, Omakase, yeah, you can pay $1,000 and get that. But we didn't go to Japan for that. We tried to find that, like, good food that is not in general, not chain. Tried to find, you know, or small chain if possible. And don't get me wrong, food in Tokyo was great, but best meal I had was comfortably in Osaka. But that Michelin star meal I had, well, that wasn't Michelin, recommended meal was almost half the price of our meal in Nagoya. We went to this Korean barbecue, Korean food, not even barbecue place, and it was seemed more like an izakaya than a restaurant. But it was the only place that charged us a table fee.
What?
In all of Japan, they charged us a 750 yen table fee to be seated, basically. Even though we went at 5, and literally my wife and I were the only two people in the place.
That's weird.
Food was fine. It was far from the best meal we had, but it was the two of us after everything we ordered was like 6,700 yen, and that was by far the most we paid for a meal.
And even that's not that much, really.
No, but when our average cost for the two of us for a meal was anywhere between 25 and like 3,500 across the entire trip. So yeah, that blew my mind. Was Nagoya, and I was looking and like where we were. What's interesting is Nagoya had the cheapest hotel by a landslide. It was a really neat hotel that was like themed around in like a library. So the downstairs was like this free open use like library section. And
oh, cool!
Or above.
I'll
post it later. It's super cool. It was like $70 a night, and it was actually a very nice room and a beautiful view of the city. It was a really really great location. So as far as accommodations, great value. Food, everything around us was either like chains, so like, you know, like Matsuya, Sukiya, all the bulk places and that stuff, or konbinis, or like ridiculously expensive, like, you know, anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 yen per person. Oof. Type of places. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? I guess just because, like Mike said, Nagoya is a big business, commerce city. So that might be, there's a lot of like higher end, you know, dinner meetings being done or something is my only assumption. But
yeah, my sense is that can lead to cheaper hotel rooms, but more expensive meals depending
on. Yeah, I think that logic is definitely sound.
Like,
so the
just
reason why
thinking
we were in Nagoya at all.
San Jose and how its hotel rooms are from.
Very, It might be analogous, yeah. The only reason we were in Nagoya is because it's the closest major city to Aichi, which is where the Ghibli Park is, and that was like one of our main attractions, was going to the Ghibli Park. So we decided to do it. And that worked out because it's about an hour-ish train ride, and it's only two switches to get to Ghibli Park. So I would recommend anybody who goes in the future, if you want to do Ghibli Park, using Nagoya as home base makes the most sense for a hotel, from a hotel perspective.
So I guess I had a question about your Nagoya experience, if you don't mind that.
Yeah.
Last time I went to Nagoya, it was kind of it's a cool place, but like it's so car oriented that getting around is a lot more difficult than other cities that I'd been to. Did you have a similar experience or
not at all? Actually,
no?
I would say out of the four cities we stayed in, obviously Tokyo, Osaka had great transit options. Nagoya was fine. We were only about 2.5 blocks from the subway, and the subway took us to areas we needed to go. To be fair, we weren't really in Nagoya to tour Nagoya. We were in Nagoya as a home base to get to Ghibli Park. That's really so it was a very focused part of our trip.
Sure.
But I easily the hardest city transit wise for us was Hiroshima. Not even close. Hiroshima doesn't have a subway. They only have a streetcar, like light rail kind of thing, and it does not go very many places. So you have to taxi everywhere, and obviously taxis there aren't that expensive compared to here, but it's pretty clear that they're meant to be a way more car oriented city, because like the Hiroshima station was the only major station that had a very like significant amount of space allocated for taxi, like onboarding off and offloading. So just another thing to note if you are ever planning a Japan trip is if you're going to any of the cities that start to get a little bit smaller, you're gonna probably have to try to allocate more funds to transit, because you're not going to be able to save money on like a subway system or anything like that.
But if you're going to Hiroshima just for like Peace Plaza and the museum and stuff, isn't there like a train station or something near that?
There's a light rail station to it. Yes.
Maybe that's why I got there, because I went there and I don't remember having a difficult time getting there, but that was like the only place I went there. So
yeah, I mean Hiroshima, most people they're going for Miyajima and for the Peace Park. Miyajima is like that's a huge part of our trip, because like most of my family is in Hiroshima area, so we always go to Miyajima. It's like a nostalgic place for us. And JR actually does run a ferry there, so our JR pass actually worked for the ferry, which is kind of convenient. Not that it's that expensive, but. But yeah, that concludes the super fun quiz time. Just a few little, you know, interesting notes about some of the logistics of the trip. But I guess I'll start off with the actual flight there. So
sorry, can I before I do that, I had a couple.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. So 5,000 yen right now is super low. It's like
$32,
like $32 right now. So maybe 35 with whatever fees you get. So you're saying that like your expensive meal for two was like $40,
which is what we pay in California normally.
For
when
Chipotle.
I say most, it's relative. It's relative, obviously, because like we got our first night. I guess I talk about our first night in Asakusa. Obviously, we're exhausted, so we just want to find something close by. Asakusa, famous tourist trap city, so everything's hyperinflated. We found a really cool, small little tonkatsu specialty place, and very glad we went, because it was like one of those places where it's like maybe, I don't know, there's a counter that can maybe see 10 people, and then two tables, so like really small, and then just the one chef and his two, like the person working, you know, the register and being the kind of like busser, and then the sous chef, and that was it. And
awesome.
Best katsu I had by an enormous margin. Perfectly cooked, amazing texture. What they did was different. They offered sauce, but they actually recommended you try almost like a ramping of various seasonings, and they recommend you start with this thing that I've never seen before, which is salt that is roasted inside of bamboo. And so obviously it darkens and it gets a lot of you know, minerals and stuff, and man, I wish like they sold it because I would have brought that home. It was so good.
Oh, it's like smoky.
Yeah, and minerally, like it had a lot more depth. It's kind of like when you first try like a Himalayan sea salt versus or Himalayan salt versus like just regular table salt. Like you can kind of detect the differences. It was up to like the 10th power, and I ended up using that on probably 2/3 of my katsu before I realized I had eaten 2/3 of it, and then I finally used their sauce, which is also delicious because it's their recipe.
And then you had a heart attack.
Yeah. But that meal, and you know, this was supposed to be like, again, nice place in Asakusa. That meal was, I think, like maybe 4,000 yen.
So for both of you?
Yeah, for both of us. Wow.
A question on your meals. Do either of you get alcoholic beverages?
We do not drink, but drinking... Well, here's the thing. In Japan, the cost for alcoholic beverages for the soft drinks, it's like maybe... If an alcoholic beverage is 500 yen, a soft drink is like 400. So they're actually, there's parity there. That's the one thing in Japan that's weird compared to the States is soft drinks there at restaurants, super expensive. Like, I would get oolong tea or like a Calpico or Calpis, and usually it was anywhere between 350 and 500 yen for that. And there's no refills because Japan does not do unlimited refills like the States does. So drinking... within restaurants, quite expensive, actually. But if you're just picking up, you know, vending machines or a company, then obviously you can, you know, I mean, I probably drank like 35 bottles of Mugicha
from
various companies because there was, you know, plentiful and fresh and cheap. So it was like 110 yen for like a 600 ml bottle. So it was glorious.
I only got bit by the beverages thing once. Because I generally just drink water because I'm a cheapo, but I ordered oolong once because I kind of assumed it was free, and boy, was I wrong. Yeah, I was
like, whoa. It like almost doubles your meal, right?
Yeah, it was like, it was like 500 yen, so I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, but back to your question, Dylan, drinking alcohol in Japan is, at meals, it's not going to be as, like... customized as it is in the States. Like there's pretty much going to be beer and various like canned or bottled pre-mixed drinks, like your strong zeros or your, you know, your pre-mixed like whiskey sours, that sort of stuff. You're not going to really have like a bar back or a bar, you know, that's going to mix drinks for you unless you're going to higher end restaurants. We did not do any we opted to not do fine dining for this trip because one, we're not really fine dining people, and two, we decided to spend money elsewhere. So we stuck with mostly, I would call, you know, middle to middle to cost effective eating, and we were very happy overall with it.
I really want to go somewhere and order a Mizuari shochu just so I can feel like I'm a real snack man.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you want to visit, for nightlife, definitely Okusaka in Tokyo, and the snack bars are plenty. So yeah, you can definitely do that. The cost for that, I have no idea. I would assume quite pricey.
You got to go to Sapporo though, right?
Yeah, you got to go to Sapporo to go to a snack and order a Mizuari shochu. Oh, right. Just like you're in snack Basoe, it's probably 500 yen. Okay. That's fine. I have plenty of other questions, but I'll let you now restart once you get a little...
And honestly, as I go, if you guys have questions, just shoot, because obviously I don't want to just be, you know, anecdoting my way through this. I want to answer questions since it's still fresh in my mind. So starting with travel. So like Sam, my wife and I took Zip Air, but unlike Sam, we opted for the what they call the full lie flat option, which is functionally their business class. So... where it differs from a traditional business class, I would call pod, is that they strip out basically all what I would call of the like bougie and luxury options. So there's no entertainment center. It is replaced with just a little pocket for your literature. There is no like special meal menu. There's no, you know, champagne on takeoff. Your meal options are the same regardless of where you sit on the plane. So you have this access to the same food as everybody in the economy class. So there are areas where, in my opinion, it makes sense to cut back for a flight is where they cut back. So what you're really paying for is your more or less private pod and the seat that fully reclines so you can actually, you know, get a comfortable flight.
So how was it for Mr. Tall Man?
It was phenomenal. I'm 6'1" and fully reclined, and fully extended out. I was like even stretching my toes out to see where it happened. So it's not quite perfect because the way the pods are shaped, it tapers where your feet go. So obviously my feet touch the wall a bit, but even given that, if I stretched out as long as I could, I still felt like I probably had about 2 inches of leeway at my head and my feet. So somebody who's even 6'4" could probably lay down and have a pretty reasonably, very, I would say quite comfortable experience, fully reclined. Uh-huh. Not to mention, it also has, for me, I spent most of my time in the in-between reclined like state where I'm leaning back and I can put my feet on the ottoman, and that alone was...
There was an ottoman?
Well, it's where your feet go. I'll post feet, like the way, I don't know if you guys have ever seen how like business class seats are in other...
Did you say you're going to post feet pics?
Not of myself, yeah. But
okay, Tarantino.
But the way it works is the seat basically sits in a pod, and instead of the seat leaning back into the pod behind you, it kind of is on a rail and it slides down and kind of connects with this, they call it an ottoman, it's more like a shelf, and so the shelf is where your feet go.
Oh.
And then the bottom of the seat connects with the shelf when you're fully reclined, so now you have basically a fully flat bench that you can then lay down on.
I see.
So, it was really nice. I can say that without a doubt, never has a 10.5 to 12 hour flight felt shorter than in both of legs of this journey. I didn't get a lot of sleep just because I have a hard time sleeping on planes just because of the, you know, the pressure thing and, you know,
noise,
random noises and just like the airplane noise. So, you know, I got a little bit, but it was more just, I didn't feel like beaten down like I do when I take economy. Because when you're in economy, I always have to feel like I'm tensing because I'm always making sure I'm not like, you know, leaking into other people's space, so to speak. And to do that for 10 hours straight is exhausting. So just to have my own spot, my own space, being able to lay everything out, lay down, have my phone out on a thing and just watch whatever, like for 10.5 hours. It felt like, honestly, both flights felt like probably 3 to 4 hour flights to me.
Wow.
What was the upcharge for the lay flat seats again?
So when we went for our tickets, and I would say we went in peak travel season because we went in mid-April. I believe each of ours, after all the fees, was somewhere in the neighborhood of $22.50 for the round trip. And good luck finding business class for even twice that with any other carrier. Just to give you a...
That's for both of you, round trip?
No, for each of us.
For each of
you,
okay.
$22.50 each of us. So it was less than $5,000 total. Because I would say $5,000 is the norm for an individual to fly business class with any major carrier to Japan.
Those prices are not much higher than, like, economy JAL. Like,
yeah, JAL, and granted, JAL is like a premier airline, right? Like, it's a premium airline. And we were looking to get premium economy because for our honeymoon when we went, we were able to get upgraded premium economy, which we liked a lot. But premium economy tickets for the same time frame were around $8,000 each. Ooh. So it was not even close. So
yikes.
If you're looking at that, like relative to that, the Zip Air Lie Flats are a phenomenal value.
Where was your where were your flights to and from?
LA to Narita for both. Okay. So Zip Air only flies out of Los Angeles, San Jose, San Francisco, and Hawaii currently. So anybody further away from... So what we did is we drove from San Diego up to LA the night before. I rented we got a hotel for the evening, and they also have a service where you can keep your car parked there and for an upcharge, obviously. So even rolling that into the total price, it was still way cheaper because that was around $350 to park my car for 17 days, basically, in a hotel lot.
Dang.
And then spend a night there, and then, it was like a 5-minute drive from LAX, so then they have a shuttle that goes every half hour. So we got shuttled in and then did all that thing. Airports on both ends of the trip were completely painless, which was also fortuitous. That has more to do with luck than anything. But
I'm assuming you don't have any of the known traveler stuff or whatever, clear or whatever they call it.
No, okay. None of that stuff. It's pretty. I would say we have to go through what everybody else has to go through, TSA wise and security wise.
Do they have like the known traveler stuff for? Because we have that stuff, but I usually just we often am just flying domestic. Do they have any of that stuff? Did you see that like at at Narita or anything like that?
I think they recognized TSA pre. Okay. I think I wasn't looking super close, but I believe they do.
Okay.
But truthfully, even with it being peak tourist season, Narita was fairly tame for us overall.
And
the terminal was very manageable.
I assume then from out of there, you got on one of the hour-long trains into Tokyo, or hour and a half, whatever it is.
So I guess I'll jump.
Before you go there, I did want a quick review of if you try, like, what your experience was, both with the internet, if you tried to use it, and two, like, the how you liked the buying stuff on the
Internet was completely unusable for me personally. I could never get it to connect. I don't know about my wife, but I assumed that, so I just downloaded a metric crap load of anime onto my phone, and that was my main. And truthfully, I didn't even watch that much stuff. I think on both legs, I watched maybe 5 episodes on the flights. The rest was just laying down and, you know, rolling around and trying to sleep, or just kind of just chilling and being comfortable in a plane, which was a very unusual feeling.
Nice.
I did use the ordering once, because on the trip there, I didn't need it, because I felt like the beverages, like, because when we pre-ordered our meal, so we both got the Hayashi beef, and we also got a beverage with it, and it also comes with a little bottle of water, so that was enough for me for the flight. I don't try to drink a lot on the flight, because I don't want to have to worry about bathroom anxiety.
Same.
And I guess mini food review, I will definitely recommend anything that's one, Japanese like, and two, soupy in nature. I can highly recommend. Other stuff, your mileage may vary, is what I can say. So the Hayashi beef on turmeric rice, very good. That was my favorite of the two meals I had. Just very tender beef, very flavorful, seasoned well, a little bit over salty, but that's Japanese food, so whatever. On the flight back, I had the curry, which was also very good. I think I like the hash beef just a little bit more. My wife got the katsudon, and it looked vile.
Oh, really?
She said it was difficult to eat. It did not look good. So, given our experience, I would say anything that's like a curry or a stew or a soup with rice, probably fine. But your mileage will vary otherwise. With regards to the Western options, I have no idea. Neither of us got the Western themed meals.
Because they're boring.
You're making it sound like they reheat them with microwave or something.
It's probably something like that. And, you know, I mean, they're cutting corners, or they have to be budget conscious there. So if that's the case, it's just as easy for us to just, like, you know, bring in sandwiches or whatever, right? Like, if you're gonna be super fickle about your mid-air flight meal, then just pre-prepare yourself is what I can say. You're not using Zip Air to get a premium dining experience. That's what I will can confidently say.
Lie flat seat sounds way better than a premium dining experience.
I completely agree. I mean, it's what that is the main attraction, for sure. I would say if it is within your total budget to spend for a trip to Japan, it will make your first 2 days so much easier, because I feel like anytime I go to Japan economy, it takes me at least a couple of days just to, like, feel not like I got beat to hell. So first night was still a little rough because of jet lag, but overall it was not too bad. I recovered pretty quickly.
Nice.
With regards to the shopping experience, I only used it once to get a coffee, and it was fine. They respond pretty quickly. I'd say within 90 seconds, I got my order. So, you know, everything being a la carte is fine.
It's good prices too, right? Like, it's not...
Yeah, it's in yen crazy. Too, so the exchange rate's favorable. So even if it's like $350 bottle of coffee, it's like $2 for a bottle of coffee. So it's like nothing. Yeah, compared to what the kind of stuff we get here domestically and what we get charged, it's laughably cheap. So, yeah, Zip Air, 100% recommend. I think from both perspectives now, given if you're trying to go as budget conscious as possible, I would say there's far worse options as well. Yeah. Sam, you could agree with that probably. Yep,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think bang for your buck, it's impossible to beat. Easily the best value proposition in airfare to Japan, and it's not even close.
So you've got experiences now at both ends, right? Like high on your end and low on mine. Sounds good.
Yeah, the one thing I will say that you should need to be careful of if you're being budget conscious. So my wife and I also paid for all of the amenity upgrades, aka carry-on and check-in limitations, because they are very strict about that. If you are going as bare bones as possible, which means just your carry-on, if you are even 1 gram above 7 kilograms on your luggage, they will make you adjust it. Like, there were so many people that were, and I'm not trying to generalize, but most of them were Europeans, who were very upset that they couldn't, you know, come in with their 35-pound carry-on because they didn't read any of the literature. So it's on them. But yeah, I would say that's the one thing you need to be careful of. What I would recommend if you're trying to really maximize, like, your spending on travel while being able to, you know, buy fun stuff is... travel there relatively light. Take advantage of coin laundry, because we used laundries over there and it was actually very easy. One of the topics I want to talk a lot about is logistical kind of services in Japan that are actually like titanically helpful.
That's a good one.
And yeah, so travel light. Maybe if you're going for 2 weeks, maybe take a week's worth of clothes and find a time to do coin laundry. It takes an hour. It's not bad. And then if you end up buying a lot of stuff, go ahead and pay for one checked bag. I think it's like an extra $50 or $35 with Zipair. And just go to a Don Quixote and either buy a duffel bag or a cheap suitcase and then fill that up, as your carry on, and then check in your dirty laundry when you're going back. Just because, I mean, if you're buying fragile stuff, you'd rather be in control of the suitcase than trusting, you know, the airport staff, right? That's how we did it. So what we did was we went there, we traveled with our carry ons and a large suitcase that was relatively empty, and we had a duffel bag stuffed in that. And then over the period of the trip, we filled both of those up to the gills, to say the least. So maybe I'll pivot more into these kind of tangential services and logistical things that made our trip a lot better, because I think this is stuff that people don't necessarily think about when they go to a foreign country, and then they kind of get stuck lugging around a bunch of really heavy luggage in this country that's primarily, you know, like train and walking dependent infrastructure. So I don't know if you guys are too familiar with the service of Yamato, the Yamato Takahaibin, which is, I'm sure you guys have seen the commercials or the logo for it. It's the mama cat.
Yeah,
we're carrying the baby cat, and it's a courier service. So I guess you can consider it like, you know, UPS or FedEx, but infinitely better, because they have infrastructure to do next day or even same day luggage shipment from hotel to hotel. So what we did was, in Tokyo where we landed, we obviously did sightseeing and bought a lot of stuff, and we had the big luggage which we filled it up with, and we didn't need to have access to that through the next leg of the trip. So we found, so depending on the hotel you stay at, many good hotels will offer this service, like offer to handle the paperwork and stuff at the front desk. Otherwise, you can do it at a Yamato kiosk or counter, which are relatively common, or you can do it at a convenience store.
Oh.
Yeah. We didn't do that, but apparently you can actually just walk into more or less any 7-Eleven, Lawson, or Family Mart, and they have the paperwork you can do there, and they have daily pickups for things like that. And so you fill out the form, which there's online tutorials for. The form is not the easiest thing to fill out, but basically what it comes down to is, when you know what do you want sent. If it's a big luggage, you know, it'll cost a certain amount, which I'll get to, and when do you want it delivered. So what's cool is that they can have the delivery be delayed up to 7 days past the day that you drop off the item.
Wait, what?
So for example, let's say that for us, we didn't need to have access to the big luggage until we got to Osaka, which was like day 6 of our trip. So what we did was, on our second to last day in Tokyo, because we were on the last day, we knew we weren't going to do much shopping. We loaded up all our swag into the big luggage, went to a Yamato kiosk, and set up to have it delivered to our Osaka hotel, which was 4 days, which was in another 4 days. So they ask you, when would you like it delivered by? And then the time ranges they offer they offer in 2 hour increments. So it's like, oh, would you like it delivered between noon and 2, 2 and 4, 4 and 6? I'm like, wow, this is great. So like, I guess 2 and 4, because that's check-in time. They're like, got it. So they confirm you want, and then they give you the receipt that has the reference number. And then when we got to Osaka, I asked about it, like, oh yes, you will find your luggage already in your room as we checked in. I'm like, damn, this is great.
Wow.
And this, the even wilder part, to send a large, so the thing is, generally speaking, they go by dimension, not weight. I think there is a limit. Like, I don't think you can ship like a 500-pound block of concrete. But within reason, if it's something that a human being can move, they don't care about the weight. They just want to know the dimension, because that's how they pack, you know, the vehicles. Uh-huh. And to send a what I would call a typical large luggage cost around 2,200 yen.
Wow.
And that was as short as next day delivery.
Holy cow. That's so cheap.
For 2,200, yeah. So
and that's including the delayed shipment?
Hmm?
Do they charge different depending if, like, if you do the delay?
Nope. Oh, wow. The only thing they state is that the delay cannot be more than 7 days beyond when you need to drop it off. That's the only policy they have.
Wow, that's crazy.
And all, the one part we did mess up on, they don't operate on weekends. So if you need to keep track of that as well. So that's the one thing I miscalculated. So we ended up having to lug our luggage from Hiroshima back to Tokyo, because it would have been too risky to try to have it next day, because they can't guarantee a range. They can try, but then if it missed us, we would be screwed. So we decided just to carry it. But that was my bad for not planning it correctly. So make sure you plan around weekends. But throughout the week, they can do next day, and they can even do same day if you do it early enough in the morning, is what I've read. I didn't try that, but apparently that's a thing. So what I'll say is, if you plan on carrying around large luggage, take advantage of Yamato.
Sounds great if you're getting a lot of
amazing. Yeah. Like, if you're planning on doing souvenir stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I could not, that's probably the number one extra worth paying for, because each time you do it for each piece, it's like $10 to $20 tops.
Wow.
So as far as logistics, there, that was really, really the best. The biggest surprise and the best thing compared to traveling in the States.
For filling out the form, was that largely, could you largely do it using English characters, or did you need kanji?
No, you do not need kanji. Okay. So if you fill out the basically romaji of the address, and if everybody here knows Japanese addresses are nightmare fuel, like they have a lot, it's weird. As long as you write it in romaji is legible enough, you can even confirm with the person's like, is this okay? And they'll be like, oh yeah, that's fine. And you can even write down underneath the name of the hotel, because likely you're going to be sending it from hotel. If you do that, it's almost bomb proof. Like it should be completely fine. And yeah, we used it twice, and it was perfectly fine each time.
Did you use any of the it was a thing I used last time I was in Japan, which was, oh goodness, at least 15 years ago now, if not more, which means time has passed. Did you use any of the like the various sized lockers that are at the JR stations or anything like that, or is that not a
we did it for one temporary thing, because we were doing a little bit of shopping before a longer train leg. They're fine, except one, they got more expensive since I left. To one that can hold a small carry-on luggage, it's about 700 yen. So it used to be 200, I think. But, you know, everybody uses them, so finding an open one is really challenging. So I would say do not bank on those. Also, the policy for the lockers is, depending on the city and the station, is anywhere from 24 to 36 hours.
Oh, okay. So they're intentionally
Yeah, and then what they do is they will have people come and staff come in, open up the locker, pull out the materials, and there's actually no real way to, like, get your stuff back.
Hmm. Okay.
So, I would say if you're going to do it for the day, mm-hmm. fine. Do not, I would not recommend doing it for long term because it gets very expensive and it's not guaranteed anyway.
Okay.
I will say I did make extensive use of the coin lockers and yeah, they're a little bit pricey, but you know, if you need it, you need it. And usually if you can get them, oftentimes you can get them behind station gates. Like if that's a thing that means something to you, I did definitely took advantage of that a couple times, but they are also, they're kind of narrow. So like Nick says, like, getting one that'll fit like larger luggage is difficult because there's only a few of those, but they're also pretty deep. So if you have like a couple of backpacks, they can fit in the smaller ones. Not too
for sure.
More difficult.
They are very deep. Yeah.
So you just have to get the right sized Godzilla figure to fit inside of it. Okay.
Yeah. The volumetric space is substantial,
mm-hmm.
But it's more the height and width dimensions that you have to worry about. Like, it was a challenge finding one that fit our large. We have a carry-on that's slightly larger in dimension. That one was a little bit tough. But, it definitely can work, but it's harder to guarantee since, obviously, it depends on how many people are using lockers that day. And right now, in peak tourism, everybody was. Yeah. So, I intentionally made sure that our travel plans were not including lockers as a guarantee. They were like a nice to have if we ended up needing to.
Well, and since you were staying at hotels and everything, they'll generally hold
your
stuff.
Luggage. Yeah, all hotels, every single hotel, big or small, have, even after you check out, they have the service of holding onto your luggage until you need to leave. So that is always going to be an option at a hotel, which is very nice.
But sometimes it's nice, like, if you don't want to go to the hotel, you'd rather, like, this was the case for me. I was obviously traveling way lighter, so it was easier for me. But if you don't want to go to the hotel and you just want to go where you're going, and you just stash it in the locker until, because, you know, you go there early before check-in time and you don't want to go to the hotel. Just throw in a
locker.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Works for that sure. stuff. But yeah, there's never bank. If you have rolling luggage, anything that rolls, probably don't bank on coin lockers.
Yeah, if it's like backpacks, you can probably, because you can kind of smash them in. But yeah, rolling luggage, I would not bank on the coin lockers. So the other thing I previously mentioned on was coin laundry. So at least, I mean, in the major cities, because we did laundry once, and that was in Osaka, and we happened to find a nice coin laundry, I don't know, maybe a block and a half from our hotel. So we got to walk through a cool residential area, and it was in Sakura River Blooming, so it was really pretty, and it was really nice, and... thing about Japanese coin laundry is, at least from our experience, you don't need to worry about detergent because the machines just load detergent and softener automatically once you start the load. So,
yeah, that's nice.
And I would say costs are probably comparable to the States. Like, it wasn't super cheap, but it was definitely not that expensive. We were able to do, a load for combined, my wife and I were able to combine load and dry for like 1,000 yen total for both of our, you know, loads of laundry. And I think that's probably about right. And the machines were all immaculately maintained and, you know, it was pretty quick. Like, the dry was remarkably fast. I think the wash was about 45 minutes and the dry was like 22 minutes or something. It was super fast, super fast.
So I'm curious, you guys did you not have coin laundry in your hotel? Because like every hotel I stayed in had
not
coin
every
laundry.
Hotel has it. So here's the thing is the reason why I do in Osaka, this was the bougie hotel. They had laundry service, as in they picked up, and the problem is they charge per article. It got very expensive. I did the math. It would have been like 5,000 yen to do that laundry load for this through the hotel. So I was like, that's kind of silly. How about we just walk down the street, you know, during our and do our laundry and then pick up lunch on the way or something. Like, it was, that just was an audible that I called, because that was one of the miscalculations. Was when I was booking hotels, it says the ones that say they have laundry, it's either they have laundry machines or they have laundry service through the hotel. They don't really specify, so that is something you do need to be aware of. But the thing is, at least the hotels that had coin laundry, they were always being used. It was so hard to get open machines because, again, tourism's at an all-time high. So unless you go at an obscure hour.
Yeah, I was doing that too. I was going late. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're trying to do laundry at a normal time, good luck. But coin laundry just around the neighborhoods, I would highly recommend. You can check out cool residential areas, cool little parks, and maybe you'll find a nice mom-and-pop shop to pick up lunch at, because you're out and about.
Maybe so. Less convenient, but more cool.
How did you do the searching for the coin laundry? Was that done on
Google Maps? I literally just typed in, you know, coin laundry on the thing, and within any of the major cities, you can usually find one within walking distance from a hotel, especially. I think they strategically put them there because they have an assumption that tourists will need it. And the ones that I saw, at least were 24/7. So if you want to try to do oddball times, you can.
Plus, who knows, some of the hotels probably outsource some of their fast laundry needs to the coin laundry that's nearby.
That I'm not sure of.
It could be.
But maybe.
When you were putting that into Google Maps, were you putting it in English or in Japanese?
Yeah. Everything in Google Maps we did was in English, and it worked perfectly fine. Google Maps has gotten advanced enough now that, with the exception of, like, really, really, like, tiny mom-and-pop establishments, everything comes up in English. Otherwise, it'll just come up in Japanese, and I can swap to the Japanese keyboard if I needed to, since I was communicating with my family via LINE the whole time. So
yeah. Japanese keyboard on iPhone, whatever, is... It's pretty cool. It's a cool design. Just the way you input stuff.
Yeah, the flick.
With regards to... I guess we're talking about Google Maps. So my wife and I are both on Android, so... we weren't able to take advantage of Apple NFC, but fortunately, 2 days before the trip, we both found our old Passmos. So that was a nice save, and they still had their balances fine because of Japan. But so
they're still not giving out tickets, right? Like they're still not giving out new IC cards.
So what they are doing is they have these travel ones that are time locked. They're only good for 28 days, and then they expire. And you can buy those at Narita, but if you don't buy at Narita, you're SOL, because I'm pretty sure, maybe not SOL, but only like the major stations like Tokyo and Shin-Osaka sell them. And they are also transient in inventory, so you can't guarantee you get one. Oof. So I will say, unless you have an old IC card or an Apple device, be prepared to do a lot of ticket machine manipulation there. Fortunately for us, IC cards, we had our Passmo, so they were universal, so we were able to use that for all the subways and other things, so that worked out well for us. We did get the JR Rail Pass, which I can say these days, we took six Shinkansen trips, which is not a small amount. Back of the napkin math, we probably broke even on the JR Pass.
Which length of pass did you get?
We got the 14-day, which is that a longer one.
About right. If you're not using it like almost every other day, it doesn't make sense anymore.
That's almost exact calculation. So because generally speaking, Shinkansen tickets are anywhere from $70 to $120, depending on the length. So you need to do the math on how many times you intend to use a Shinkansen versus how expensive the JR pass is, because they got real expensive. I mean, we splurged for the 14-day ones, and I think with the conversion, they were like $550 each. So we just about broke even on Shinkansen rides, which is fine. It was convenient because, you know, it's just literally a QR-coded ticket that you could just, you know, push through with into the machine, and it'll do its thing. You still have to obviously book the reservation using the JR pass, but that wasn't a big deal. I think that's the machines are all English capable now. So
So how did you do that? Were you using the machines, or were you using your phone online to book your tickets?
Yeah, I didn't really figure. I think this is just me being old, but I couldn't figure out how to do it well easily through the phone. So we just ended up doing the machines. You just scan the QR code, put in your passport number, and then tap out what, you know, stations you want to go to, what day, and what seats you want, blah blah blah, and then it spits you out a companion ticket which you shove into the machine at the ticket gate along with your JR pass, and it just processes it accordingly,
which is so rad because you can just slap a stack of tickets into the thing and it just goes through.
I know, it just figures it out. Yeah, great. I love the, I mean, I you can see plenty of YouTube videos on the Japanese transit system is just a modern marvel. I mean, that, yeah, I mean, there's a reason why most people don't need cars in all the major cities, because all the public transit infrastructure is so easy to use. But yeah, coin laundry, definitely recommend. That way you can reduce the amount of clothing you need to take and still, you know, have room for for buying your all metal Eva or your Godzilla, you know, or your 1/20th scale Godzilla, whatever you want. But yeah, I think that just about covers like the logistical and like travel related stuff. I mean, that was quite a bit of it.
A couple ones I had. So with your my wife and I we have iPhone. So I think I'm trying to remember here, like from the previous one we had. So did you have to get a different eSIM or anything, or did you just pay for your carrier's international service? Or
so we were a bit unusual. We're on Google Fi, and Google Fi works seamlessly across like 200 countries, including Japan. So literally, when we touched down, I turned off airplane mode, and literally Google Fi says, "Oh, we see that you're in Japan, syncing," and then it goes, "Welcome to Japan. You don't need to do anything else for your data. Wow. Just continue using it as
that's
is."
Pretty,
and I was like, "Oh,
that's
cool."
Pretty cool.
We used a crap load of data because we were constantly mapping around. So. Yeah. That, you know, is another expense. But I did the math because Google Fi charges $10 per gig. We used about 5 gigs total across 2 weeks. And that's how much it costs to get one SIM card.
Yeah.
And we would have wanted two. Mm-hmm. So it still worked out for us. But obviously not everybody has Google Fi. But yes, I would recommend getting either a transponder, which I would say is kind of irritating because their battery life's not great. I would just recommend getting a SIM card. You can do it. They have like vending machines at the airport now that do that, so you can do it any number of ways. If you do it, if you plan ahead of time, it's probably more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I would say that a decent amount of Wi-Fi options in Japan since I last went. Which was
yeah,
nice.
I was gonna wonder, like, did most of the hotels and everything have Wi-Fi?
Every hotel had Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Regardless of the quality, every hotel had Wi-Fi, and then a lot of the train stations actually have Wi-Fi now, which was surprising.
They had weird. When I've tried to use some of those in so my first day, I don't, maybe I already went over this, but like I screwed up big time on timing my phone thing, and I was trying to connect to like public Wi-Fi, and various places want you to like sign up for an account, which is not great. But I mean, hotels.
I mean, what I have a dummy email for that, so it's literally just for these, you know, Wi-Fi accounts, like dummy Gmail for it, and that's what I use to work around.
Yeah,
that.
I just that's too much of a pain in the. For me.
It is a pain, sure. It is a pita, I agree. But, you know, you can plan around it. But, yeah, I would highly recommend anybody going to Japan either having a carrier that can already handle transitioning to international or getting the SIM, because that definitely saved our butts. Granted, Google Fi only has LTE there, so at times it was kind of inconsistent and not great. But, you know, again, that was just one of the minor hiccups.
I mean, that's plenty
in the
fast.
Trip. Yeah, it's good enough for maps, usually. Usually. Sometimes it kind of bugged out, but I think it's more to do with like the density of the people.
Well, mm-hmm. You were probably also less map crazy since you weren't driving as well. Is that...
Yeah, but it was mostly to look for stuff. Right. And we walked a ton, and neither of us are super familiar with the major cities, so, you know, and planning also routes with trains and stuff, especially in the big cities. That was something we're both like very have like travel anxiety where you don't know the exact route, so, you know, we did a lot of that. But
and if you knew you were going to be using more data in Japan, then you could just upgrade your Google Fi plan for the month.
You could do that. We weren't that min-maxy about it. But yeah, we could have done that. We could have done the unlimited plan for the month and then canned it after we were back. But it ended up not being too big of a deal.
Yeah, it sounds like it came out pretty close to even for you on that calculation.
I would say overall it's about the same if we upgraded the plan for the month versus just paying for the extra data we used. It's more or less broke even for us. And I would say we used a good amount of data. Not a ton, but you know, I wasn't streaming or anything while I was out, but... So
I will say one, and again, maybe I'm repeating myself, but there is the only reason I would ever recommend somebody use the Wi-Fi hotspot puck thing, is if most phones these days have a Wi-Fi calling feature. So like if you turn off cell service on your phone, you can still make calls. It'll just switch to Wi-Fi like seamlessly. And so while you're in Japan, you can still make and receive calls on your normal U.S. phone number as like a normal domestic call.
I didn't think about that as of advantage. For the workaround I had for that was line to be able to reach my family.
Oh,
easily.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's
and
the
then for any, and then for anybody else across, I have my other means. You know, for work, yeah. I have WeChat, and for other stuff, I have my other. So I didn't, you know, we didn't have to rely. Oh, but Google Fi also has unlimited texting in Japan, so we were able to text just fine. So that was another nice bonus. So I was able to drop some photos to family and stuff.
I still don't think like it's worth like it's make that. I don't think that makes getting a Wi-Fi hotspot worth it. But even that feature is good to know about. Sometimes, like if something happens back home in the States and you need to make a phone call, like it can come in handy sometimes.
Yeah, I think the value proposition for the Wi-Fi hotspot comes down to like how many people are going to be on it. Because if you're like a family of four, I think getting four SIMs is probably just a little bit excessive. But
yeah, true.
You can all connect to that one Wi-Fi. So it comes down to, for my wife and I, it would be kind of tough because it's like we would both definitely need access. But there was, you know, a non-zero chance that we would each be traveling independent of each other sometimes, which we ended up not doing. But, you know, so depending on when you look and where you look, you should be able to get a SIM for around $50, I would say. 50 to 100 is probably the range that I've seen most often. So it really depends on what you're looking for.
Probably, I mean, boy, I definitely wouldn't spend more than 50 from what I was seeing for like, that should get you like a month, I think.
Probably, yeah. I wasn't looking too hard because I always saw it was like, oh, Google Fi is just, that makes it easy. So we just, I turned my attention off of any of the other features after I realized that. So
and eSIM is a feature. Everybody uses your eSIM if your phone's
well. The problem is that my eSIM is already occupied with my current.
No, they should support number, multiple, so. Doesn't it? I mean, mine supports. Mm-hmm.
Mine only supports one physical and one eSIM.
One at a time, but you should be able to switch between them.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
A question on cash going over there and how you did that. Yeah. Did you bring any yen with you, or did you just get stuff when you got to Narita or whatever?
Good question. We brought all the cash ahead of time, and the only reason we did was because my father happened to take a trip in December, and he came back with way too much extra. So we bought it off of him for $150 on the dollar, which ended up actually not being a good rate. Because it's like 155 right now.
Yeah.
Gotten even better, which is hard to believe. But it was fine. It was good enough. We were happy with that. So yeah, we came out with basically all of the cash we theoretically needed. I had on me from the beginning, and I was okay with it because Japan is super safe. I wasn't worried about getting robbed. So
how did you physically carry it?
I'll show a picture of later. The rare time my dad recommending me something and letting me borrow it worked out. It's this little like body like satchel thing that is like a multi-purpose. So I had my passport, our cash, my wallet with my I call it my Japan wallet because it can hold. It's big enough to hold yen bills. With my IC card, you know, all the stuff I needed, and it even had a little slot for my phone. But I usually kept it in my pocket, and it's like a little single over the shoulder strap, and then it kind of sits flat against your chest, so you can keep it on you, and it's all zippered up, pretty secure. So that was really nice to have because then I didn't have to worry about loading up my pockets. I just had this, and I knew exactly which compartments had what. So if I needed to show my passport, I just opened up the passport pocket. If I had to pull out my IC card to tap for, you know, train transit, I could do that. And then if I had to pull out cash, I could do that as well. So.
Nice.
As far as getting cash, it seems pretty easy. Like there, I saw every 7-Eleven I walked into had like a cash exchange machine there, and the exchange rates were listed in real time. They looked quite good. So
my advice is generally like if you don't already have a good source of cash, like Nick did, but you can always use a 7-Eleven ATM to get money out. There's like or a bunch of other places that have ATMs. I think oftentimes they're free, but sometimes they're a really small fee, like $5 or something like that.
Not even that. What I saw, I was kind of I wouldn't say, you know, I was just glancing because there was a couple of Americans that were using a 7. At least the machine, they were using at two options. You can either get 10,000 yen for a 100 yen fee or 20,000 yen for a 200 yen fee. So basically you can get equivalent of, well, I mean, not even 100, but you know, air quotes, $100 for a $1 fee or $200 or $2 fee. So it was not too bad. 1%.
Way less than US ATM fees.
Yeah, way less.
Especially to 7-Eleven to be like a $10 ATM fee.
Yeah, but I mean, we're the nation of profiteering, so it doesn't surprise me here anymore. But it seems pretty easy. And in the major cities, any medium to large institution, so be it a store or a restaurant that's a chain, let's say, most of them take credit card now, especially after pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So using credit card in Tokyo is probably ubiquitous. I would say it starts to get less common in like mom and pop shops and taxis and small cities. That's about it.
Even mom and pop shops, though, like while they may not take a credit card, I mean, I don't know how this splits, but I think I also mentioned this before, but the IC cards you can pay with at almost every place now because of the pandemic.
Almost, yeah. We were at one, I only was at one store that took only cash, and that wasn't the problem because we had tons of cash. Yeah. We worked cash most of the time. But yeah, that did seem to be the case. So I would say don't go to Japan completely cashless, but you can very easily get cash if you're in a major city and even a medium. If there's a 7-Eleven, you can probably get cash pretty much instantaneously.
I would say don't count on exchanging your money there. You'll get ripped off pretty bad.
Oh, do not exchange money at the airports. I would say just use an ATM.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to figure whether we should try and like get some yen ahead of time now because the exchange rate is so good and it might not be as good in a year, and then bring some over with us, or just be like, well, risk it, whatever it is in a year, it probably won't be that much better or worse.
You should be able to get yen at any like major, any bank. You can just do a foreign currency
withdrawal.
It depending on the currency, there might be like a 24 to 48 hour like waiting period, but if you're doing it ahead of time, that shouldn't be a big deal. But I would say bring you know, think about how much your budget is, and maybe try to bring anywhere from all to, you know, as little as a quarter of that in cash, and then you can probably make the rest work out.
Yeah, particularly if you're prepaying for hotels and
exactly
some of those like the transit stuff as best you can ahead of time, and then you're like, okay, what am I paying for is food and the extraneous transportation stuff and the omiyages.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, your biggest expenses will all be paid up front, or they'll take credit card. Like,
yeah, every hotel we were at would have taken credit card, so that wasn't would have been an issue cash wise. So yeah, looks like there will definitely be a part two because we pretty much got to how I got there and some logistical stuff. So I'll actually talk about, I think next step we can specifically to probably talk about Ghibli Park, because I think, Sam, you haven't gone yet, right?
No, I'm really excited to hear
about
that.
Love to hear about that.
Yeah, so I think I can probably make sure that we allot a good amount of time to there, because I definitely have opinions about it, both good and bad. Cool. So I look forward to filling you in on that. I think we'll go ahead and call this part
one.
Do
we have any housekeeping for the app?
Oh yeah, good question. Do we have any housekeeping for the app? So I guess something for the listeners, we are deciding to change our format a little bit. We will have any kind of previous episode corrections and or comments for the end of episodes instead of the beginning. That's just kind of a format change we're playing around with to see if it will help with our episode lengths. I don't believe we have anything from the last episode. Do we, guys?
Nope.
Nope. And the with the moving of corrections, additions, etc. to the end, it may lead to some more potpourri episodes, and we're fine with that.
Exactly. Alrighty. Then, look, I think we're going to go ahead and cut this off here and do part two for another day. So with that, this is AMO Kenzoku, signing off. Saraba.